Welcome to Toffee Blue View, your source for all things Everton. I'm Jerry. Terry and Max have graced us with their presence. Gentlemen, I usually like to welcome you and have a little brief discussion about something shared. We were talking off camera about England's recent international, success. First one being over a hapless and frankly embarrassing U.S. squad, and then where they move on in the UEFA, was it League of Nations, the Nations League? I don't know what you want to call it, but yeah, good thing. Did you guys get to check out any of those? And you have any thoughts about that? Because I got to be honest, it was cool watching Keane and Pickford both play for England against U.S.
The England supporter in me only comes out every 4 years, to be honest.
It's amazing. You guys really don't watch that stuff that much. So instead of talking about those games, let's talk about why not. Seriously. I think this is good conversation. Max, you started talking. Why don't you care?
I had this discussion for about 2 hours today in my lecture in university.
Good.
Well, I mean, not so much now, I'd say, but obviously the past history of the national team being very southern-centric, very kind of London, south-orientated. And from a personal perspective, I remember for my birthday 1 year, my dad took me down to Wembley to watch England against Germany. Germany won 2-1. Since then, I've always kind of leant towards Germany because I've preferred their structure and their the way their football association operates, you know, that from grassroots level upwards. Particularly if you look at when they won the World Cup in 2014, the fact that that group of players, you know, a lot of them have played together, you know, coming through the system, you know, that's really impressive to me, and I much prefer that to what it tended to be with England in past years, where it seemed to be, you know, Steve Gerrard, Frank Lampard, Paul Scholes, so it'd be like Mr. Man United, Mr. Chelsea, Mr. Liverpool, and it just seemed to be like a clash of egos. I mean, credit to England and Gareth Southgate now, I think they've really turned the corner, and, you know, they're a lot much more of a likeable team now, and as I say, you know, I am okay, you know, I'm happy for them, and particularly Keane and Pickford, but I don't know, I just... Too much international football, Jerry. It burns me head out a little bit, to be honest.
So, people, this intro we're using for the podcast and not for our videos. So, the listeners couldn't hear Terry's constipated look that he made when I mentioned watching those games. He did this. It's almost like a sneer. Like, yeah, not really my thing. Yeah. Terry, so I assume your thoughts are not too far from Max's then?
Oh, they're further on than Max's, really. I've got no connection with the national team at all. Like, I'd sooner see Everton win a throw-in than England win the World Cup. I don't care. As far as I go with the national team, I check to see if Everton players played. Did they get injured? And then that's all I care. I mean, I wouldn't mind England doing well, but it's a Merseyside thing. The Liverpool fans don't care either. The club picture is just so strong here that, like, no one. It's not true of most other places in the country, but in Liverpool, there's a we're Scouts, we're not English type mentality. Now that's an overused phrase, and people don't like that phrase now, but it is true of a lot of people here. But I mean, I could go on about. I don't like England supporters en masse. I mean, not in general. Not the vast majority would be okay, but there's a very loud minority of England supporters who they're not the best people. Anything you say about them, they're all just they're being ungracious guests when they go abroad, and yeah, just the worst people. I mean, for me, England fans are like the really strong Trump supporters. It's our equivalent. That's quite a strong statement, I know, but with me any friends, I'm sure, but not that. No, England are just not my cup of tea at all.
So I think it may be fair to say I actually watch England and care about it maybe more than you guys, which is really funny, because I usually try to watch them when they're on, and I actually had to figure out a way to watch them on Sunday play against Vlasic and Croatia. Vlasic did not have a bad game either, by the way. That's a thing.
Yeah.
For another day, we'll have to discuss. But I actually think England's really fun to watch. Maybe it's the fact that I'm super jealous, and my team is not fun to watch right now, and is a little bit like taking an ice pick and putting it in my eye. But I will admit, Southgate has you guys playing really. It's exciting. You know, you were losing against a team that was bunkered back against Croatia, and he makes a sub or two, actually two at once, and all of a sudden they find themselves in it and they score two late goals, and it was exciting, it was fun, you know. It was pretty cool. So interesting. So essentially what you're saying is folks at Everton should have known about some of the Scouse, maybe how much they don't really care for the England squad before they put up England's number one on their video board the other day, right? Folks at Everton should have known that. Should have known that wouldn't have been a good idea.
I don't know why they did that to begin with, to be honest with you.
Well, I think they're trying to say, hey, you know, look, this is the guy that he's the best in our country.
But it sounds like that was a bad idea. I know, they're trying to prompt atmosphere, aren't they? You know,
I've got to be honest as well. The Scouts Not English thing doesn't extend to kids. Kids like England.
In
Liverpool anyway. Like, I remember when I was young, I was interested in England, but you sort of like, I mean, I don't know whether you'd agree, Max, but as you get older, your interest in it does wane, doesn't it? When you're a kid, you care, especially when an Everton player plays for England. Like, for me, it would have been Rooney for a short spell at least. And then after that, Baines and Jagielka, but even by that point I was a little bit too old. But you know full well the kids will love the idea that Pickford is England and Everton's keeper, so I can understand why they did that.
So yeah, I wasn't sure if it was one of the things that Max described, which is that bias for those top six teams, and how there's just, you know, always a much higher percentage of players there, and some players that may not necessarily deserve it get preference over some of these players from the smaller teams who deserve a crack. That would jade me a bit if I saw it year after year.
Yes,
to be fair, it's changing. This version of England, Southgate's England, is the least like that. That's the thing. Like, that awesome. May be that. Now, to be fair, the closest I've come to, you know, being interested in England is this incarnation of England, because Southgate is quite a refreshing change. So maybe this jaded soul will come around to the England, be a proper Three Lions England fan.
This is kind of funny. We've accidentally like pulled a segment out of just making conversation on introducing an episode. So yeah, this is cool. And it's interesting to me. Because for me, it's like a weekend with no Everton. It's like, I need to fill it. I need some kind of football. You know what I mean? Just any kind. Waking up on Saturday and not having a game to watch sucks. All right. Then I have to watch some stupid cartoon that my kids want to watch. Okay. And guys, Vampirina is awful. Okay, it's about a little girl vampire. I hate it. There's little songs in it. I have no idea why my kids like it. I guess we can kiss that Disney sponsorship bye-bye. Or maybe it's Nick. Anyway, whatever. I'd much rather have them force-fed watching either, you know, Premier League or Bundesliga. Just saying. anyway, now that we've gotten this far off track, let us bring it back and really quickly sum up the show for the podcasters who have been so patiently listening. We're going to start off with a Cardiff preview. Because we play them this weekend. Should be interesting. I think we may all be on the same page on this one, though. Then we're going to branch into something that we don't talk about often, and that's the stadium. The new stadium at Brantley Moore. We're going to talk about capacity. I know it's a new conversation that Evertonians haven't had yet. It's a little out there, but we thought, let's go against the grain, do something different. Yeah, we know it's been done, but you know what? We want to talk about it as supporters, okay? So we're going to. And then we're going to talk about Everton's worst Premier League signings. Not what worst signings ever, because, you know, that's a long conversation, but worst Premier League signing. And we're going to finish it off with, if you know your history, the Everton-based quiz show that pits Terry against Max with the gold medal of picking what we close the show out with, what kind of tune do you want to hear. They're going to be naming the players who played in a certain Everton match from the past, and that's all I'm giving you. That's it. So, let's talk Cardiff. They're currently, I believe, 18th in the table with 8 points. They recently did just beat Brighton, though, 2-1. Lost to Leicester 1-0, lost to Liverpool 4-1, and they beat Fulham 4-2. So, let's start with Terry. Terry, Cardiff's an interesting team because they're one of those teams from the Championship who didn't change much. They kept their same manager. They didn't buy a lot of players. They wanted to keep a certain stability because I think they were trying to learn from the previous time they got promoted. Very different than Fulham. What do you see in this Cardiff team and their chances of survival and pretty much whatever you want to say about them?
They're one of the weakest teams that have come up from the Championship, and even their own manager acknowledges that. I mean, I've got respect for clubs who try and keep the squads together when they come up and try and like give those players who've earned promotion a chance to have a crack at the big time. And plenty of players have become Premier League stars from that, where by excelling in a promoted side when they come up. But I just don't see Cardiff just haven't got the players to stay up. I mean, this game coming up, I can't see anything other than a Everton win, and a comfortable Everton win, because there's no game-changing players. There's no one. They don't have to be a competitive Premier League team. They just have to be better than three others, and I just don't see them being better than any other teams at all. I can see them finishing rock bottom, because you know Fulham, who are currently struggling, will go out and spend money to try and to fight against the situation they're in, whereas Cardiff are just going to soldier on. And I mean, I just can't see it. I don't see anything from them that makes me think they've got any chance of staying up.
Maxwell, what do you got?
Yeah, I agree with Terry. I see them as they're just kind of limp towards the finish line, I think. I don't want to call them a prehistoric footballing side, but I think if you're managed by Neil Warnock, he's just one of those managerial journeymen, isn't he? And it's kind of blood, guts and snot with him, isn't it, really? It always makes me laugh because I never think of Neil Warnock. You ever remember a few years back there was vines that went about, and there was a fella who was really good at editing motion pictures onto so you take clips and put people's faces on them or whatever. And he took Neil Warnock and he put him on Tony Soprano's mum of the Soprano.
Yes, I've seen that because he looks just like her.
Liv Soprano. So whenever I look at Neil, saying that though, I haven't seen them from the actual source, or whether they're from programs, I don't know. There's videos that kind of circulate social media about Neil Warnock, particularly from his time at Sheffield United, where he's in the dressing room and more often than not, Jags is there, and he's just not scared of giving them an unrelenting bollocking. And I've got to be honest, I like seeing that from a manager sometimes, that kind of tries to keep his players' feet on the ground. And I think he's certainly got his work cut out for him with this Cardiff side. But I've got nothing against Cardiff. It's not that I don't like them. I remember after Malky Mackay was sacked and he got Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in, I think he just got beat by Liverpool, and it was that 13-14 season where Liverpool, you know, were storming and looking like they were going to win the league. And I think after they just got beat by Liverpool, someone asked Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, do you see Liverpool being genuine title contenders? And he just turned around and went, couldn't care less. So from that, I kind of got a bit of a liking towards Cardiff. But no, I do see an Everton victory. I don't want to jinx it at all. But I think we're in a position now, I think, where we're going to overpower these teams that are technically and physically weaker than us. Saying that, I think a point that needs to be brought up is they're a very physical side. I think in the 12 games they've had so far in the league, I think that, not necessarily always for them, but there's been 4 red cards. So I think they always bring out the physicality in a side, whoever they're up against. Mm. So I think that'll be an interesting thing to keep a lookout for.
That is a good point. It seems pretty clear that they're a championship side. You know, when you watch them play, they look like they are consistent and scrappy, you know, physical, consistent and scrappy. And that's, yeah, they may do some things to get your blood boiling, try to get you a silly card here or there. I expect them to come out and be really physical with us. That's what everybody's been doing. But I think Cardiff would be doing it anyway, regardless of who we are. I look at this squad, possible starters, Etheridge, is it Ekwele Mangala, or Ekwele Manga, Morrison, Solbamba, Cunningham, Harris, Gunnarsson, Rawls, Josh Murphy, Camarasa, and Patterson. If I just looked at that, because I watched them play last week, because I knew we were playing them soon. If I had just looked at that today without having seen them last week, the only image I would get in my head, the only person I would know, is Josh Murphy. And that's because I think we were connected with either him or his brother a couple of years ago,
yeah,
about us possibly being interested in buying him from Norwich, I think.
Yeah.
And so it's just a team, yeah, I mean... It's not. I looked at their starting striker, Patterson.
He's a strange one, isn't he?
Look at him, man.
One of football's weird utility men. Like, he played at right back for the Scottish national team the other day, didn't he? Like,
I didn't know that.
So strange. I've got an opposition view coming up with a Cardiff supporter, so I think I'm gonna pry on that matter.
Yeah,
I always find football's utility men quite interesting.
If you look at him, though, he looks like a player in the wrong era. He just looks like somebody from, like, the 80s. Huh. He just doesn't look like a product of 2018 right now. Something about his mustache and everything. But he got a scrappy – I think it was a scrappy header last week. Just kind of ball bouncing around, and he just managed to get ahead on it. Dangerman, you know – He's their leading scorer.
Junior
Patterson
Hoylett.
Is.
Hoylett? Yeah, I put Hoylett forward. I remember when he played for Blackburn, there was one game where he caused us quite a bit of trouble. I think we gave away a few penalties against him. And when he moved to QPR, I think he scored against us, and it was quite a good individual goal. And you know what Everton are like when it comes to certain players? They'll always kind of give a pedestal to certain players to go on and have a good game. But he hasn't quite hit heights this season. I don't think he's not even starting, isn't he? I think he was the top goal scorer last season, but he's not getting in the side, which just it kind of writes it all for him to come off the bench and get the winner in the last minute. But I suppose we'll see.
I was also going to say Murphy as well, yeah, just because he looked really confident last week.
It's 0-0 in the last minute, mate. You've got to ask serious questions if he's going to stop what we're drawing of any kind. But they've still got Bobby Reid. Striker, Cardiff.
Not sure.
I don't actually know. I'd have to look.
I think they have, but we were linked with them last summer. You know, when panic mode set in, when the Giroud deal collapsed. I think we were linked with them.
I thought it was Zahor.
Oh, like, yeah, that's
big striker. He's actually, I think he's hurt right now. I'm not sure if he's on to be able to play or not.
Yeah, I was. I just thought, it was Zahor. You're right. That was one of the connections. I just remembered that we actually got quoted, though, something silly, but like 30 million for him.
Yeah, it was 30.
And I thought Steve Walsh will probably pay that, but...
he wanted to, I think.
Yeah, but I don't know. We'll bide our time, wait till January. Yeah, I mean, if you look at their defence, the way I look at it now with these teams coming to Goodison, unless it's one of the top teams, I just look at their defence more than anything, because they're going to more than likely set up defensively because they're going to Goodison. And if you see what Richarlison and Sigurdsson and everyone else did to Brighton's defence with Duffy and Dunk. They're much better than Cardiff's defenders, and look at the torture they inflicted on them. So I can't. I mean, I've just thoroughly jinxed it, I know, but we've got to really put a good performance in against Cardiff and get a good win. Clean sheet, ideally. Two clean sheets would be nice to take into the derby back-to-back, because then it'd breed confidence that we're ready to take on a really strong attack. Because if we concede against Cardiff, everyone's going to be nervous going to Anfield, aren't they, let's be honest.
Yeah. What's your prediction, Derry?
I'm going to go with 3-0.
3-0. Sounds like the prediction of a genius. I'm not sure if you caught on what I'm just saying there, but yeah. Go ahead, Max. What do you predict?
2-0.
2-0. 3-0 Blues. I normally don't pick anything that swelled. I normally don't. I just feel like we look really strong right now. And I feel like Cardiff, with their consistency, they just sort of look the way I expect them to look, the same way they did a few weeks ago. You know what I mean? I don't know. I just feel like we look really electric on the attacking end right now. I agree. So, anything else on this, guys?
I don't know if we mentioned it, but Ashley Williams has just been caught out calling Cardiff fans mugs. I suppose he's still attached to the club, so that's quite topical. But he got caught calling Cardiff fans mugs on international duty. I'm sure that'll go down well.
What does that even mean? Seriously?
A mug? Don't know.
Yeah.
Idiots?
Fool. Like, could be taken advantage of easily, more or less.
Ah. So, Ashley Williams continuing his brilliant career trajectory was it hitting the opposition's keeper last year? Was that not enough? Inciting our getting one of our fans so jacked up when he was holding a baby. old Ashley, Ash Williams. Yeah, I continually forget about old Ash.
Coming to Everton just did something to him. He was seen as like this really no-nonsense, like strong leader at Swansea, and he was, you know, the captain of the national team and
a proper
old-school defender. And when we came to us, he had one season and he came back to pre-season after that, and it looked like he'd been going to festivals for a year, and he had like dreadlocks and put on loads of weight and everything, and then he started acting like a fool and acting a mug, if you will, elbowing players, literally gets sent off. It's like, what the heck? What happened to you? Now he's on loan to wind his contract down. It's like,
I think he just here's me actually giving the guy the benefit of the doubt. I think last season there was a lot of confusion with our players. Period. I don't think they were given enough instruction. I think you look at Michael Keane as being Exhibit A. What he's doing this season under Silva. I think that Ash Williams should be starting here if he was with us? No, he's not good enough. He's not as good as the other players. But I think he would have performed better with a manager who specifically said, this is your role, man. You know what I mean? It doesn't make him more athletic. You know, but I think you're looking at a guy who just wasn't a happy guy. I think he wasn't a happy player.
To give my 2 cents on the matter, I think it was doomed from the start, really. If he brought in to replace John Stones, and you're not an absolute Rolls Royce of a centre half, then I just don't think it was going to work out for you anyway, to be honest.
I see. I was expecting a player who's not going to be doing like Cruyffs in the back and possibly give away an easy goal. But one of the things he did frequently was give away easy goals. That's the one thing I expected him not to do, was do stupid shit. And what did he do? Yeah. You know, he made a lot of mental errors, which was not characteristic of him.
Yeah, we signed him 2 minutes before his legs went and his brain went about somehow. It's just like, that's one of those things, isn't it? But yeah, at least he's not our problem anymore. He's our player, but is he? Because we're not going to renew that contract. It's going to just run down and then so long.
Yeah, poor Stoke. They still have to deal with him.
Credit to
in
Silver.
Reality, I'm not actually saying poor Stoke, but you know what I mean.
Credit to Silver, though. He weeded out a lot of bad apples in that first summer. Like, so many players left, even if it was just on loan, to get rid of them, because he was like, I don't want you around. Go train by yourself. This is my group, and I'm going to train with this group. And now look at the team spirit's gone through the roof.
And Marshall.
That was what I was going to say. Yeah. They brought the right guys to come in too. Good vibes, you know. It's nice to be able to look back on last season and say, it's not today, is it? You know. thank God. All right. Well, I guess that's it for our Cardiff preview. Terry and I being a little brave with 3-0 prediction. Max with his uber conservative 2-0 prediction. Not that conservative, you know what I mean. Are we possibly not giving Cardiff enough respect? Possibly. We'll find out, though. I feel like we're okay. Anyway, that's it for our Cardiff preview. Stay tuned. We'll be talking about Bramley Moore capacity, branching into stadium discussion. We're going to do that. Because we're Everton supporters and we have something to say about it. Jerry, Max, Terry. That's right. We're trio today. And we're here. We're going to talk about Bramley Moore capacity, specifically capacity. So we are not going to get into a lot of the specifics of the financials because none of us are financial experts unless these guys have been holding out on me.
I'm 20 years old and in student debt, Jerry. I'm not a financial expert.
So we are just going to be giving our opinions as supporters. If you want specifics, listen to the Everton Business Matters podcast. It goes in depth. Read the case for 60,000. I think that's out there. There's lots of information about it. However, we've got Max and Terry and me here. So, some initial thoughts. Let's start with Max this time because it's his turn. Max, your initial thoughts, 60K, yay or nay? You see how I did that with the poetry?
Uh-huh. Smooth.
Oh my God. I'm going to put it on my CV. Anyway, go ahead.
It's a strange one for me. Personally, I just say throw caution to the wind and go for the 60,000 because if you want to implement a long-term future, you obviously want to be able to sell that 60K out. I look at Manchester City as an example in the Etihad, the stadium that I go to often. I think that's 55,000. Now, I think Everton have a much larger fan base than Manchester City that would actually go to the game. So, would we sell out 60K? Because we certainly sell out Goodison. And what's Goodison exactly? I couldn't tell you off the top of the head. What's Goodison exactly?
39.
We sell out Goodison comfortably. So, I don't know. It's either 60 or 55, isn't it? I think that we're going to roll with. I go with the 60 because I think if we want to reach the upper echelons of being, a top European side, that's the capacity that you're going to have to, facilitate.
Terry, what about you?
I'm very conflicted about it, really, because there's two schools of thought and I can see merit on both sides. I mean, on the one hand, a lot of people are very eager for the 60,000 because, it's a statement of intent. It's future-proofing because if you build it smaller, then you've obviously, you're sort of capping yourself. You're not allowing yourself to grow any bigger because we will comfortably fill a 55,000-seater stadium. But whether we will 60,000, like I don't think the club itself, I don't think Everton have the confidence in that right now. I think they feel that they could in the future, but on opening, I think they'd be worried that there'd be 5,000 empty seats until the team improves on the pitch. Not necessarily, I don't agree with that. And as Max said, then he thinks, and I think we'd sell out 60,000, but it's what the club thinks. Now, the whole point of getting a new stadium is to increase revenue. Now, if you want to keep the prices at affordable levels and low, like they've frozen the ticket prices this week, then more seats is better, because in order to improve revenue, if with a smaller capacity compared to the potential bigger capacity, you'd have to raise the prices. So 60,000 seats at an affordable level is the same as 55,000 with a slight increase. But despite all that in favour of 60,000, the thing that sticks with me is how reluctant Dan Meese was when he was asked about the 60,000. He was very, he didn't come out and say, no, I don't want 60,000, but he was like, considering the site, the size of it, and the design I want, and to make it iconic, I sort of got the vibe that he thinks the right capacity would be less than 60,000. And I've got time for that. I've got a lot of faith in the professionals when it comes to stadium design. I know we want 60,000 because West Ham have got that and we're bigger than West Ham, or Liverpool are going to get that and we want to compete with them in the city. But then if the architect and the club itself are thinking, you know what, we've got all this sort of data that supports 55,000, but you get so much more for that, given the site and how iconic it'll look, and for the sake of an extra 5,000 seats, it's not worth it. I don't know. There's all kinds of different ways you could look at it. 55,000 or 60,000 with more expensive corporate seats might be able to make, you know, generate more money. There's so many variables that I honestly, we were doing this segment and I've come into it, I don't know which I would prefer. There's merit on both sides, but I'm literally gonna wait to see what the club announce, see what their rationale is. If they cave to the overwhelming sort of feeling of supporters, which is, I think, for 60,000, great. See if you can make it work. Let's go for it. Let's dream big. But if they come out and make a good case for 55, go, hey, it's 55. Here's why. Here's what you're going to get for that decrease in desired seats. You're going to get all these extra things that you're going to love. Be fine with that as well.
Yeah, that led to my next question, Terry. You kind of answered it already. But if we're talking about iconic, unique, landmark stadium with 55 instead of 60, would you be okay with less at that point, Terry? And then we'll go to Max.
Yeah, absolutely. That was my initial starting point opinion, but yeah, then I sort of swing between the two because there's yeah, I would be. I would sooner have the right, capital R, right stadium for less seats if it's ours, if it's the iconic waterfront stadium on the Mersey, rather than we lose a lot of what would make that great to fit more seats in for the bigger number because it's more satisfying. I would rather, if you offer me a better stadium for 55, more iconic, more signature Everton, definitely going to go for that. I'll forego the seats. And I think, just a hunch, I obviously don't know, but I think that's the way the club are going to go, and that they're going to probably push it that way, that this is the right stadium for Everton, and the capacity, you may think it should be more, but honestly, you'll appreciate it when you get it.
Max.
Well, again, reiterating, I'm no expert at this, but I couldn't necessarily see how an extra 5,000 would grossly distort the stadium and take it away from being iconic, really. But on that note, that is something that is constantly repeated by Dan Meiss, how it's going to be, a career-defining project for himself and how he wants to make it iconic. And, of course, if that comes with it being 55,000, then, I've got no issue with that. I think a big thing that's coming across, particularly with what Terry's saying as well, is we just want the new stadium, to be honest. It's been coming. This it comes with, not a rebranding, but it gives a refreshed image to the club. You look at it's going to happen to Tottenham. It's happened at Atletico Madrid, particularly with the iconography of the location as well on the banks of the Royal Blue Mersey. It's going to do us wonders, and it's going to benefit the local economy. It's going to have so many, plus sides and benefits. One thing that I do think is worth mentioning that Everton as a football club, I don't think we generate enough revenue from ticket income as our rivals because, like Terry said, you know, we've persistently frozen our prices, which I think, you know, is the ethical thing to do. So I think if we roll with the 60,000, that would, you know, it future-proofs it and it gives us that extra revenue, obviously, which is ultimately as a business and as a club, we want to generate more profit from ticket. And then, you know, you don't want to cap yourself at 55, if, you know, if you want to push on.
It's tough. Do you look at, is it all about, I mean, we have a, I'm assuming you have a similar saying, keeping up with the Joneses. Do you look at the other clubs and say, we go there? You know, this, these are the top, you know, eight clubs in terms of capacity with their stadiums. Do we need to nestle in there? Or do we say, forget you, we worry about ourselves, we worry about who Everton are right now, who Everton is right now, and we worry about, and we focus on our own world. And I don't know the answer to that, you know, because I've always kind of gotten the impression that Everton are kind of focused on themselves and not worried about trends as much, which I find, you know, refreshing. However, if we're building a new stadium, is it a small club mentality to think we can't fill that? I think we can fill it. I like, honestly, I feel like if you look at the different research that's out there, I think filling a stadium that's 60K is very possible for Everton. I think they would find a way to do it regularly. And I think the growth of the supporters, I think you'd see a phenomenal growth.
From the business and marketing perspective, if the product, that being the football on the pitch, improves, yes, that will bring, you know, that'll bring more of an audience. So, yeah, I agree, definitely.
But there's always the possibility that they say, if the club builds a smaller stadium and gives a logical reason, one of those like, look, we couldn't work it out because of the lay of the land, because of all the different stuff we had to put around it. Because it's not just a stadium they're putting there. They're putting a whole community, essentially, in that area. If they come in and say, look, it's got to be 53, and it's because of the area we're putting it in, because of everything we're building around it, is there going to be that part of you that worries it's that small club mentality with them being paranoid about not being able to fill it? Is there going to be that part of you that says you want to call bullshit and just say, wait a second, you know? I feel like Everton supporters kind of have that ingrained into themselves to kind of be able to look at the people in ownership and the people in, you know, the head people and say, look, that's not right. Why are you thinking we're small? You know, I think Elstone is one of the ones that has particularly been called out on that in the past. But he's gone now.
Mm-hmm.
He's not there anymore. So, but are you going to have that little nugget that's maybe a little skeptical that maybe there's some other reasons for it that's not just the logic? Max, you want to start with that?
I think there's been a, you know, in terms of the boardroom hierarchy, obviously there's been a lot of changing and shifting that's occurred. And I feel like slowly but surely, you know, a bigger club mentality is surging its way into the club. You're certainly seeing that by Mashiri's kind of involvement with, you know, investing and pumping money into the team, which it's clear that he does want to improve the product, and he has been, you know, the trailblazer in pushing on and you know, taking these baby steps that needed to be took to get that new stadium down. It's obviously a move in the right direction, no matter what. I think I'm going back to the point where I'm just happy that we're finally getting this new stadium. You know, yeah. I remember back in the day, I wasn't quite old enough to comprehend it, but I remember the Kirby thing. Everyone was a bit up in arms about moving to Kirby, and everyone seems to be quite settled on this. There was, you know, obviously there was a lot of conflict over Walton Park as well. But everyone seemed to just, you know, be content with this. And like Terry said before, you know, if we have to wait, then we'll wait, no worries. But as long as we carry on going in this correct direction, which I personally feel like we are, both on and off the pitch.
Yeah, I think Terry actually mentioned something that I actually think is the case, which is what Dan Meiss was saying, which is he's been dropping big hints it's going to be less than 60. Okay? He's given those hints on Twitter basically saying, look, it can be iconic and give you the atmosphere you want. He seems very hell-bent on making sure the atmosphere is similar to that at Goodison. He is very, and it's interesting, he has tied himself so much to the club to where he seems like a legitimate Everton supporter now. But it's almost like, it better be perfect, Dan. You know what I mean? If you're all for it now, it clearly matters to him a lot, you know? Terry, I think you're right. If it's less than 60, I think it's going to be because Dan has figured this is the best bang for your buck in terms of atmosphere. He's faithful to Goodison. I mentioned this other stuff just because I feel like you hear a lot of that on Twitter. You see a lot of people on Twitter talking about small club mentality, and we can definitely feel it. What are you thinking? You know what I mean? And that's why I ask you guys, because you guys have been Everton supporters longer than I have. And are you going to still have that little jaded part of you where you're like, I don't know. So, Terry, what about you?
I mean, I understand people who would feel like that because we've been down this road before, but no, I wouldn't have that just because I would have had it if this was the previous administration. I don't think Mashiri would be on board for that small club mentality for everybody. Mm-hmm. Clearly, in the transfer market and everything else he wants to do, doesn't think like that. He wants to improve us, but he wants to make us bigger than we are now. But I'm just, this stadium move ideally will be the first step of taking the club truly global, because right now we're a big English club, but our global footprint is quite small, especially when you compare it to our contemporaries in the Premier League. We're the seventh best team on the pitch, and we're a clear seventh biggest in terms of branding. Now, this stadium, it could ideally would be the first step to taking that, going into that next level. Now, I think Dan Meiss is right. I think the right stadium, again, I'll say capital R, the sweet spot stadium for Everton will be better than having the number be higher, which will, it might not even matter to anyone except us. Like, I know it does matter with the amount of seats you can fit in it, but if he says, listen, I know you want 60, but it's 56 and here's why, and just here's some drawings, look at it, I think a lot of that will go away. I think when the concept art comes out, it will a lot of the doubts people have got. And yeah, I don't know. To answer the question, I've gone a bit round the houses. I don't think it'll be a small time thing. I think it'll be a realistic thing. I think it'll be, well, Dan Meiss might turn around and say, well, my brief was to make it as, to take the best from Goodison with us, to take that sort of a steep, close to the pitch atmosphere and make it a real intimidating cauldron. And you can't have that with these extra seats because it doesn't tie into the way the design is, and it'll move things around and you'll lose a bit of that for the sake of having a higher number, more satisfying number. So I don't know. One thing I'm certain of, I don't think if it's less than 60, I don't think it's a small mentality. I think it's a fact of the site we want. And people forget this site we thought, this riverside stadium, we thought it was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity with the King's Dock. We thought we'd missed out on one of the best opportunities for a new stadium ever. And it's come back around and we're now sort of quibbling, well, there's not enough seats. I think we need to just check for a second that our Christmas list has come true. We honestly went before we had Farhad Mashiri, was listed, what would you like? And like, okay, we want the stadium on the riverside, we want brand new team, we've we've got all that. I think we need to lose sight of that sometimes, because at one point the new stadium the idea of a new Everton stadium was just one of the, something that made Evertonians roll their eyes, because we'd had so many false dawns. We'd had Kirby, we'd had Walton Old Park, Kingstock. I don't know. I think this stadium is something we're all going to have to be patient with and understanding with, because this time feels different, put it that way.
Certainly hope so.
I like the idea of having... I think we've obviously learned the lesson from West Ham. Okay? There's a lesson there. I know when I my buddies of West Ham supporter, I said, hey man, you got a nice big stadium coming up this year. You guys, and you know what? You got a bunch of players that want to play in that big stadium, man. And I was like, you should be pretty hype right now. And then I watched one game there, and I told him, I said, you know what I said about that nice stadium? I was like, it's a void, man, where sound goes to die. So it's rough. So the idea of having a place iconic that is just is electric in terms of atmosphere, like Borussia Dortmund, where you know that their stadium, yeah, it's a wall, it's a wall of sound, and it is amazing. The idea of being able to sit there and feel the energy of your fellow, you know, supporters, that would be huge. And that's looking at it from the inside, not even looking at it from the outside, you know, with the drone footage or anything like that, you know. I think if we get something iconic that allows for some serious growth for the club to start making that global impact, I think we will be satisfied. I think we will be happy. I mean, my prediction is I don't think it's going to be 60,000. You know, I just don't. After hearing what Mice has to say and reading his clues, I don't think so. But do I want 60K? Yeah, I do. I do. I'm envious. I'm really envious. And I don't want to have to hear Liverpool supporters coming up to me. You bought a new stadium. You got a new stadium and you don't even have 60,000. What the hell? And I just don't want to hear them talk anymore. So yeah, that's a thing. But
we're on to our third stadium in the city. They haven't even built one.
And then they say stuff about us paying rent. Yeah. Anyway, but do you guys actually think, just really quick predictions, do you think it'll be 60K max?
No, it'd be on the touch side under.
And Terry, you were shaking your head. You don't think so either?
No, I like yourself. I think what Dan Meese has been saying says it all. I think it'll be under. I think it'll be higher than it was going to be due to the reaction, but I don't think it'll hit 60. And I think they'll do a real good sale job when it comes out. Why it's not 60, and probably put some nice pictures out to take the sting out of it.
That sounds really logical. So, yeah. So I guess that's it for our Bramley Moore capacity discussion. Again, if you want a really in-depth look at this in terms you can pretty much understand, Esk has that, the case for 60,000. I'll try to remember to put a link to that in the description. 'Cause it is worth your time. I mean, and I understood it. And who am I? So I guess that's it. Coming up, we're going to have a discussion about Everton's worst Premier League signings. So could be fun, hey? Everton's worst Premier League signings. And being kind of a fledgling Everton guy, I don't have as much experience. I wrote a couple names down. But I also wrote some other names down. I found various articles on the subject, and I tried to take a smattering. You guys may have some, though, because you have a lot more experience in this. So I want to start with you. All right? I think with the last segment, I think we began with Max, I believe. So, Terry, worst, Everton's worst Premier League signings from your point of view?
Depends, really, how you look at it. I really struggled with this when I found out we were going to do it as a topic, because you can think of some really poor footballers, but then a lot of the worst players that we brought in were like, they were like for very low money, or we made the money back, so they didn't really do any damage. So you could look at, say, Alcaraz or McGeady or players like that, and Cuco Martinez in there. But then you can look at it and go, well, McGeady was free and then didn't really do any damage. He just wasn't very good. Alcaraz was free. He did do a little bit of damage because he was very influential in costing us a European two-legged game. And Martina, not a very good footballer, but came in the side when he was needed and did as much as he could. But then you could then look at value for money and then say, all right, who came in for big money and didn't do anything? And then you're looking at totally different players then. I hate saying this because I rate him as a player, but Klaassen. He was brought
one of the
in.
Ones I wrote. Yeah.
Didn't really play very much. Wasn't really up for it physically for the Premier League. Lost money on him, like lost money on his price tag, and paid him a lot in wages to not play. So he's got to be in there, right? Like, you know, like fairly or harshly. The one I'm going to pick for that metric, so I've ruled out any players who came in on a free, even if they were terrible, because they came in on a free. You can't really be too annoyed at it. But a player who came in for decent money and didn't live up to expectations. He was by no means one of the worst players we've had, but he was a big letdown. Was James Beattie?
That's one of the ones I've got written down. So yeah,
James Beattie was our record signing at the time, and we at that time did not spend big. I think it was £6 million, which sounds laughable now, but
I wrote down 8 million. Actually, was it 6 or 8?
Yeah, it was 6.
Okay, then someone got it wrong.
He eclipsed Nick Barmby, who was 5.5. He was before him.
Wow.
So we were on the crest of a wave. We were playing really well. We were in the top four, and we did finish in the top four that year. But in January, we needed that player to give us a boost in momentum and to sign a big, strong target man centre-forward, England international. It was just totally different to what we had, and I thought... We came in and thought, that's going to be a game changer. He's going to come in, and this solid team that David Moyes has built has now got goals in it. He came in and he was out of shape when he arrived. He didn't really suit Moyes' team, and he was the biggest waste of potential, I think, not in his career, but at Everton. I felt like he could have been a lot better at Everton. So, and he cost at the time decent money. So that is probably one of them if you sort of fiddle around with the what qualifies. So going to put forward to the right honourable gentleman, James Beattie. It's the first name.
Gotcha. All right. Made 82 appearances for us as well. So Max, got a name or two?
Right. Well, I've got a few names, but I want to start off with one before my time. Well, it was in 2000, I think he signed for us. I think, like 4. But once you hear, a supporter actually ran on the pitch and offered to take his shirt at Arsenal.
I've written this down too.
Alex Nyarko, coming from Lens. I don't know how you just can't... his name wasn't. It just isn't on your tip of your tongue. A supporter runs on the pitch and says, lad, just give me your shirt. Like, you're just not doing a good enough job. I could do a better job than you. Surely you've got to be considered as just one of the worst Premier League signings ever. A few more, kind of, from where I've got a better memory of it. Felipe Senderos, do you ever remember that monstrosity of a transfer? We signed some weird players. Yeah, like Lucas Neal, I wasn't a big fan of. Lars Jacobsen. We had just really odd-bod strikers. Ever remember João Silva? Just some young Brazilian kid who I think he made a few pre-season appearances and Moyes hyped them up, but he never delivered. Trying to think. Magai Gay? Possibly. Biggest letdown in that respect being that semi-final against Liverpool where, you know, you wanted Drenthe to cause havoc down that left-hand side, and then ended up being McGaigay, which is a bit of a letdown, you know. But he did put that nice ball in for Jelovic against Sunderland in the quarter-finals. Royston Drenthe, maybe you could push as... I mean,
I can't include a lone player because they didn't like they're sort of cost neutral. So for me, a player who's a bad sign is someone who you bring in with big expectation and decent money. Doesn't have to be a massive amount of money, but spent money because he's going to change a team and he just doesn't. So anyone who's on loan who was free, I can't include them. But
from that metric, I think you've got to pick Davy Clarkson then, haven't you? I watched him quite a lot when he was at Ajax and he really impressed me, and I still wish him well with his career now.
Yeah.
But what a flop that was, really.
Yeah. He was the first name I wrote down, and I didn't want to because I like him. He seems like he's got a good attitude. His recent interviews, he's been very blunt and honest, but the line about when Allardyce came in, all hope was lost or something, it was, you know, I feel like... That's kind of how all of us felt. he's very frank, which I kind of appreciate that. And he was respectful, or decently respectful of...
Unsworth,
yeah. He was like, look, I disagreed with the fact that he thought I needed to be more physical. I still do, but... And I'm sitting there thinking, well, I actually agree with Unsworth. I didn't think you were physical enough. I agree. I didn't think you were athletic enough to play in the Premier League, but whatever. But Claussen, definitely. I wrote down one that the only other one that I came up with, because again, I'm working with my brain, not yours.
Is it Yannick Bolasie by any chance?
No.
I was
going
to say value for money wise, you could push that. Yeah, could. Just an absolute flop.
He's going to be up there, value for money wise.
That is a fair shout.
I mean, he did get injured, but
Think about it, right? We signed him for those big games, for example, against Liverpool, against Manchester United, where he often put a good job in for Crystal Palace, and he got in. You know, he blew out before those games even come up. Looking him out on loan. So,
because right now it's not the type of segment where we're allowed to say it's not fair to include him because he got injured. You know, that's not what this segment is. We're not saying it's the worst Premier League signings because they had no work rate. None of them did. Well, that's not true. Some of them got injured, you know, and Bolasie did, and I think it's fair to mention him. I wrote down we didn't spend much on him at all, but only because Martinez hyped him up a lot, acted like I thought this guy was going to end up being a part of our first team setup, and he played one FA Cup game.
Lassina Traore.
Actually, no, but that's, I thought about him too, but the fact that he scored a goal made me immediately push him to the side.
The fact he got injured in a bloody warm-up at Stamford Bridge got a factor into
that was kind of funny though, sadly, in retrospect. Do you know who I'm going to say, Terry?
No, I was going to say Traore as well.
Leandro Rodriguez.
Oh, the Uruguayan.
Yeah. He was a player who, he came in and Martinez kind of acted like, hey, this guy's going to play. This guy is ready. What a weird transfer. That was a really strange transfer for us to bring him in out of the Uruguayan league, because it wasn't even the right river. You know what I mean? It wasn't even the river from Argentina. It wasn't River Plate from there. It was the river in Uruguay. And he wasn't even blowing up that league either. It was such a strange transfer. And that poor guy dealt with homesickness and depression. That's why I felt bad putting him on there. But, yeah, I don't know.
One that's similar to Klaassen in wildly different circumstances, but like expectation and hype versus results, was Andy van der Meijden. Van der Meijden, when we signed him, was an absolute star. He was a hot winger for the Netherlands when they were world class at the time, come from Inter, and we got him for a very small amount. I remember being shocked at the time, like, how are we even getting him, and how are we getting him for next to no money? And then obviously, you know, he had a lot of personal problems when he was here, but like, when you thought you were getting an absolute gem of a player, and then he just hardly played, and when he did play, it was you know, it was interrupted all the time. So again, not a big price, but what you thought you were getting compared to what you got, he's got to be one of those disappointing signings.
He was on the pitch for the Gosling derby, so I don't know, he's in my good books for that. I think it's just me, that's my favorite game of all time. So
that's what I was going to say, Max. You pretty much forgive any player who's even connected in that in any way.
You know what? I don't forgive Gosling. I don't like the way Gosling conducted himself about leaving the club. Kind of sold himself off as a bit of a mercenary. But, you know, I wouldn't include him in our worst Premier League. Well, he was from Plymouth, wasn't he? We signed him from Plymouth, young lad. He was a good player.
I think pound for pound, it has got to be Klaassen, hasn't it? Like, it pains me because I spent all last year defending Klaassen, thinking he should get a chance. And I still think they think he should have compared to some of the other players who were playing. But his brain was right, but his body wasn't. He was a good player, but just not for this league. It's happened to plenty of players who look great elsewhere. It's happened to better players than Klaassen who come to this league and go, nope, not for me, doesn't suit me. And then they go elsewhere and carry on their careers. But for what we spent compared to what we recouped, it was the biggest loss I think we've made out of the list we've mentioned anyway. And a lot of wages for a player who wasn't playing. He was just training every week.
So I just want to ask Terry, right? Someone who was, you know, I've seen highlights of him for Newcastle and for Tottenham. David Ginola only played one game for us. I know it was very late on in his career, but was that much? Were there that much of a mismatch, him and Everton at the time?
Gold, like we were into that at the time, like Gascoigne as well, and it's just to be honest, that's a little bit before my time. Like I was old enough to remember that, but I got into football quite late, so I didn't really see much of that. But I remember hearing about it, and it was just that was us at that point. We were. It's like Allardyce's Bolton. Like you just sign these star players from different era and hope they might pay off for a season. But no, but people might even say that Gascoigne's one of them because you know he was a sensational player, but didn't really do it at Everton. So
I saw a special on Ginola. There's like several different players. It's like a series on Netflix. I saw that. And it seemed like his attitude was, very, very confident in himself.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, look at his 2 feet. Now he played a bit of football. Rightfully so, I think.
But it's the kind of thing where sometimes it seemed like if you have a certain attitude, though, that kind of thing may not mesh well with certain locker rooms, you know?
Yeah, so. I agree with that.
Tell me if these are fair, the other ones that I wrote down from this list. One of them is a loan, which immediately Terry's like, doesn't count. But by the way, Terry, I totally gave you a Southern accent just then. A Southern American accent. Doesn't count, man. But this one was talk about how this was a weird loan transfer, and it came around the time when we actually were getting a sponsorship. And so it's Li Weifeng. Apparently, like he had 2 appearances, came on loan, and everybody was talking about how it was just the stuff that I was reading is just that he was just a strange transfer at the time.
Yeah, I think one of the games he played, he was a centre back alongside Joseph Yobo, and one was Nigerian and one was Chinese, so he got taken off because they couldn't understand each other. That's my favourite fact about Li Weifeng. he was terrible. That was part of a kit sponsorship deal, like with Kajan.
So okay, so it was a sponsorship thing. Interesting. Such a strange circumstance. So would you include? Do you think it's fair to include Per Koldrup on the list with 1 appearance but injuries? I think we got him. Again, I don't know if these amounts were correct. This said we got him for $5 million, and the idea of paying him $5 million per appearance seems a bit. Steep.
Do you want to take that, Max? Do you remember him? Because I do, clearly. But
not really, but about 2004, that wasn't it?
Yeah, he was brought in from Fiorentina.
Fiorentina,
I think he went back to Udinese or someone like that, but he was brought in by Moyes. And Moyes, the Midas touch for transfers for the most part. I can count on my hands the amount of bad ones he made because he had to be careful. But he came in, crawled up, and you know he was exciting at the time because he was like a Danish international already, and you know he was a big profile player. Came in and he wouldn't play him. It was dead weird. Like everyone was like, why isn't he starting him any games? Like he's still playing Weir and Stubbs, and he's not playing this new player he spent decent money on. And he got one game at Aston Villa, and he couldn't head the ball. There was all rumours like we'd signed the wrong player. We'd scouted his centre-back partner. I don't really believe that, but that was the talk at the time. And I think it's come out in other people's, in like certain players from that era's books. Like I think Weir, Stubbs and maybe even Osman. Might be a little bit before Osman's time. But he got to training, and it probably... early version of what Klassen was, but obviously under different circumstances, where he got to England and whilst he looked great somewhere else, like, oh, we can't deal with it here. He gets pushed off the ball by strikers, and Duncan Ferguson was in the squad at the time, so you can imagine in training Duncan Ferguson's trying to win headers against him, and Crawlsworth must never have won a single one. Mm-hmm. But he went back in the January for like 3.6 million or something like that. So we recouped his fair amount of money and just moved on from him. But he's up there for bad buys because for the same reason, more extreme version of what my reasoning for BT that came in for all right money at the time and just didn't fit. But was much more quickly moved on and tried again.
Max, were you going to say something?
I don't want to piss Edward off, but I want to nominate Omanias. Like, I know obviously he kind of put the nails in the coffin of Koeman, and quite fittingly. But £13.5 million from Lokomotiv Moscow to like Russian Player of the Year, scored all these, you know, half full of opportunist goals, poaching in the penalty area, and you know, I think one of his first, I think it was Bournemouth's first game, because I remember in the Leicester game as well. It, you know, when he just showcases touch and it just like it goes out for frozen, like a throw in. And you just like,
he just
looked like a competition winner at first, didn't he? I think he's obviously kind of acclimatised a lot more now, and he does have a certain impact when he does come on. But at first, he just looked like a competition winner, and never 13.5 million.
I think he's worked his way off this potential list. I think if a year and a half, 2 years ago, he would have been easily, wouldn't have been a topic to discuss. Just said him straight away, but
yeah.
No, he's grafted and like worked his way off this list. He can't be on there because he scored goals, he impacted games, and it 13.5 million, while seemed a lot at the time, is not now. So no, still not a great player, not in the Nias camp, but no, I can't put him on a list of worst ever. Not now anyway. He would have been number one not long ago.
Yeah, I agree. A couple years ago, you immediately jump and say, yes, he is the winner. Mm-hmm. We don't even need to say anyone else because but now the fact that he's won us games, he's come on and literally almost by himself, you know, gotten us points, especially last season in the dark days, I also, but Max, I don't think you're alone. That's why one of the reasons you saying that, I think there are a lot of viewers and listeners out there who are going to hear that and say, yeah, I nominate him because I have two eyes. I'm serious. I feel like you hear that. You see that on Twitter all the time. Yeah. People are like, yeah, I don't care. Yeah, sure. He scored goals. I don't care. His first touch goes to Ireland. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's so, yeah. So that's why you saying that, Max, I get it. I wouldn't put him on the list just because he's gotten us points, and technically that's a better bargain than these others. But, yeah, the first touch thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Definitely.
But the other last name on the list, and tell me if it's fair to put someone with as decorated a past as Marco Materazzi on the list.
I think it's sent off for Everton. He amassed a couple of red cards in his appearances.
He only had 27 appearances.
Not his most famous red card. That would come a lot later.
Oh, no.
Yeah. No, I don't know. That's a little bit before my time. But Ashley Williams. So, you know, it.
So many from the last couple of years, almost just being a kind of trial and error club with money.
Comes with spending money now. Like, you, we're not used to it, but clubs do this all the time. Even like the better clubs will go, yeah, we've signed some absolute duds. Mm. But he came in for 9 million, did an okay job at first, and then devolved to the point where he was embarrassing the club, like across Europe, by, you know, fighting with the Lyon goalkeeper. And, you know, like in the league, he was getting himself sent off deliberately, and just everything. Like, he's got to be considered for me, because we spent proper money on him, got about 6 months worth of playing out of him. And you wonder, like, the improved defence under Koeman, how much of that was Williams being more defensively sound than Stones, or just not having Roberto Martinez as the manager anymore? Would Stones, well, I think I was about to word this as a question, but there's no doubt in my mind that Stones, if he'd have stayed, would have been much better defensively just by virtue of not having Martinez. So you can't really pin the improved defence on Williams. I think he was a terrible buy.
I agree.
I think I look now and you look at what happened to Williams, you have to think he's a terrible buy now. You know what I mean? I do think he came in crap circumstances that didn't help him, but yeah. And I think he would have done better if Silva was here, but still. I mean, you only have the sample size which you have to look at. You know, can't really develop, you know, base these kind of things on what ifs. So, yeah. The fact that he did put in a stretch of passable work, I think, does kind of make the argument for putting him off the list. But last year is really, really fresh and sensitive. Just saying. I remember Allardyce. And, yeah, that was bad. So, so I guess that's it for our Everton's Worst Premier League Signings segment. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it's time for If You Know Your History, the Everton-based quiz show that pits Terry against Max. So the way this one is going to work, this particular cage match, these guys are going to have to name the starting 11 and the subs that played for Everton in the 2-0 win over Liverpool, October 17th, 2010.
Okay.
So for you gents, was that the last time Everton beat the Shite?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's awesome. I realize it's a long time ago and we're supposed to be a little disheartened, but that's awesome you were there. That kicks ass. Just saying. Sorry, I get all like geeking out about my friends being
just
a cool shit.
It makes me so sad that that's the last time that we beat them.
I know. Like I said, it is a little awful bit of a downer, but yeah. Regardless, we are going to be naming the starters and the subs. So you guys were around for this. So I expect you to not miss any of these guys. Just saying.
We'll see.
I'm not going to set you up for failure, though. You know, I'm not going to put the expectations up too high, but I expect perfection. So we need to flip the memory card for those of you listening. I don't have a coin because I don't believe in change. But here it is. We've got a memory card. This is heads. This is tails. Who is calling it?
Go on, you. I'll go tails.
Max just. His little heart just broke. Terry just stole it. Oh. Ready? I'm flipping, and it is heads, actually, and then it fell off. Does that count? Are you guys fine with it falling off? It's heads. All right, Max. We know you want to go first.
Yeah, please.
So, cue intense quiz music. And there it is. So, Max, begin. Which players played for Everton in the 2-0 win over Liverpool, October 17th, 2010?
Mikel Arteta.
That is correct. Terry.
Tim Howard.
Tim Howard. He was okay. That is correct.
Leighton Baines.
Leighton Baines. That's correct.
Phil Neville.
That is correct.
Yakubu.
That is correct. I see the gears in Terry's head turning.
Sorry, I lost connection in the jam.
Oh, so it was... Okay. Funny story for people listening. To me and Max, we just saw Terry totally frozen in thought. Okay, because evidently his connection had frozen. So me and Max were under the impression that Terry was just thinking really hard, but he had lost connection.
So. No, Phil Neville.
Well, you said Phil Neville. I got that.
Oh, so Max has done another one and I've missed
it. Yes, Max said Yakubu.
Sylvain Distan.
Sylvain Distan, that is correct.
Leon Osman.
Leon Osman is correct. This is getting exciting.
Phil Jagielka.
Phil Jagielka, yes. He was there. He played.
Have I said Tim Cahill?
You have not, but you have now.
Okay.
That is correct. He was there. He played.
Seamus Coleman.
Seamus Coleman is correct.
Who's been said so far?
Okay, you have said Howard, Baines, Jagielka, Distan, Neville, Coleman, Arteta, Cahill, Osman, Yakubu. And the impressive part about this, guys, is that they all started. You have nearly named the entire starting 11. Okay, just a quick update on the quiz I need to interject here. Apparently... we got mixed up and we lost track of who was going. And so Terry ends up going twice in a row, possibly corrupting the entire rest of the quiz. Anyway, on with the show.
Whose goal is it now?
I believe it's Terry's, correct? Because you just said Cahill?
Right.
Oh, no, hold on. Yeah, I actually don't remember.
I think you did say KL last.
Okay.
Jan Heitinga.
I'm sure he played. He will have played, won't he?
Oh, I think he may have come off the bench because I liked Heitinga. Remember?
So is that your guess? Is that your guess?
Yeah, Jan Heitinga, yeah.
That is correct. That was the starting 11.
Have we named the starting 11 now?
Yes, you've named the starting 11.
Oh, so we're into subs. Predicated on that was the season that we signed him, and I got his name on the back of the home shirt that season, Jermaine Beckford.
He came in for Arteta in the 74th minute. So yes, that is correct.
Oh, that's so difficult.
I think I've got one.
Do you want to give it to me? Because I can't. So we've got the starting 11 plus Beckford. Steven Pino? We would have started.
Yeah, Pienaar is not on there.
Oh.
Okay. Pienaar is not on there, and he was not on the bench either.
So do I lose, or does he have to get the next one
right? Was he gone then, or was he injured? Was he then already? Or?
I don't actually know. I have no idea.
No, because when he was gone, we had, like, Drentha and that, so I think he must have just been injured.
Have we not named them all yet?
No, there were two more subs that came in. All right.
The one I was going to say, but we brought him up the other day, fucking Billy.
Yeah. Mm. I'm assuming you're talking about...
Billy Aletinov. I'll save Billy you the Aletinov. Pronunciation.
Yeah. I've been working on it, though. Billy Aletinov. Yeah. I actually practiced some, and then you said it, and I can mimic it. Hey.
Yes. Who's this last substitution, then?
It's an odd one. Tony Hibbert came in the 72nd minute for Haitinga.
You know what?
Beating Liverpool 2-0, David Moyes is bringing Tony Hibbert on. You know what I mean?
Tony Hibbert as a player on the last quiz I did let me down, and I was going to say Hibbert instead of Pienaar, but I thought no, Hibbert's let me down once before. At this point, he wasn't playing because I thought to myself, Neville and Coleman were both playing, but it was when Coleman was a right midfielder.
Right midfielder, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so...
because that game, Seamus Coleman set Tim Cahill up for his first goal, and Cahill didn't celebrate with him, and Coleman fucking pushed him and got angry at him. I remember that in the celebration.
Is it because Cahill liked to do his own thing by himself with the celebration?
Cahill was just buzzing anyway. Merseyside derby goal.
Nah. Okay, so the subs that didn't play, Jan Mukka, Mustafi.
Yeah.
Yeah. Magai Gay and Jose Baxter, actually. Those were the players on the bench. So so I guess we give this round to Max. Max, your laurel for winning is picking. I don't know if you knew this, but you get to pick the tune that closes out the show. Yeah, yeah.
That's nice.
So, Max, are you scrolling through your iTunes to try to figure out what you're gonna pick?
I am. I've listened to 3 Kanye West albums today, so I think I'm gonna go with some good Kanye, not like modern idiot Kanye. Like,
I didn't know there's good Kanye. This is interesting to me.
Mid-2000s.
For those of you listening right now, Terry has an old curmudgeon face like I have. Whenever we hear Kanye, we're like, oh, Kanye. Yeah. Max, I'm sure you've got good reasons.
Yeah, no. I completely and 100% understand why you despise his fucking guts, but... like. I think he was good back in the day. He was good. I'm gonna go with "Can't Tell Me Nothing." It's on the album "Graduation."
Can't tell me nothing, which sounds like a Kanye song. To be fair, if I was to make up a song by Kanye immediately, I would have that's the phrase I would use. So "Can't Tell Me Nothing" by Kanye. So why? You said that it's good Kanye. What makes it good? What makes it good Kanye?
Well, right. You know, I said I'm a huge fan of J. Cole.
Yes.
Kind of like who I hold as the current, you know, best in the world in terms of hip hop and rap. He brought out a song called "False Prophets." Basically, it's a kind of diss at Kanye for turning into this weird propaganda advert machine that he's slowly but surely become. Mm-hmm. And if you go back to some of his old stuff, like I said, I'd listened to the 3 of them today, The College Dropout, 808 and Heartbreak, and Graduation. They're 3 really good albums. Like, The College Dropout, for example, is just about how ludicrous the education system is, which is very apt to my situation at the minute. But yeah, I just felt like diversing and a bit of a Kanye today, and I have done, and I've had a very productive day, so it bodes well with me, obviously.
So I'll be listening to this. Who knows? I might listen to it and like it. I may not be. I may drop my fuddy duddy act just for a little bit. I will say that Stone Roses track you picked about a week or two ago. I knew it. I'd heard it.
Tune in it.
Yeah, I knew it. I love it. I feel like it's on the soundtrack for Guy Ritchie movie. Is it Snatch or Lock, Stock? It's one of the two.
I haven't seen Lock, Stock. I watched Guy Ritchie on Joe Rogan the other day, his podcast, and back, and you know he's a black belt in jiu-jitsu.
No,
Guy Ritchie's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. What a talented individual.
Great, Max, thanks a lot. Now I've just forgotten the last bit of math that I had. Just forced out the last bit of math in my brain. Now that I know Guy Ritchie's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. What will I do with this newfound knowledge? It's so precious. anyway, but yeah, that song was awesome, by the way. I want to listen to more of that band. Let's hope I said the same thing about Kanye.
You won't.
You never know. I'm hip. I'm with it. All right. So while we're soothed by Kanye in the background, it is the end of the show. It's time to end the big show for podcast listeners out there. Thank you. You're just nice for listening to our voices. Please subscribe to the Toffee Blues podcast. Rate it if you can. Leave a kind review. You know, we're not averse to people saying kind things to us. You know, why would you think otherwise? That's just crazy talk. Also, if you desire to see our faces, we have a YouTube channel, the Toffee Blues YouTube channel. It's over 1,300 subs now, and we're not sweating it either. I'm just saying. That was me acting like it's a big deal. Anyway, I like pretending like I'm cocky. Just saying. So check that out if you will. Check out Terry, Liverpool Echo Fan Jury. Check out Max, the Toffee Blues website. Both those guys, they write up a lot of analysis, so check that out. Subscribe to the Toffee Blues on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I'm out with the plugging. No more plugs. It's plugless. Guys, thanks so much. Terry, good to talk to you, man.
You too, man. Thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
Maxwell.
Great to be on as always.
Gentlemen, much love to you. Thanks for your time. We won't be doing a later in the week recording because I am American and Thanksgiving. So that's a thing that is happening. So happy Thanksgiving to Americans out there, and to non-Americans, happy normal day of the week. Yeah, hope it's great. All right, much love to everybody, and let's grab 3 points this weekend. So, bye.